Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, clones, what's going on? Welcome to the Daily Jungle, Thursday in the books. Just like I called it, Penguins over the Caps. And the Ducks also slayed their Game 7 Dragons. They beat the Edmonton Oilers 2-1, just like I called that too. Three excellent interviews on the program. Ducks D-man Cam Fowler, Golden State Warriors guard Sean Livingston, UFC president Dana White, a conversation you do not want to miss. Alvy, do what you do. Let me just say that all good things do come to an end. All good things absolutely do come to an end. Thankfully, my Stanley Cup prediction streak is not one of those things. This is why when everyone was jumping on that Washington Capitals bandwagon, I went the other way. You see, there's no sheep in me. And whenever I see the masses doing one thing or saying one thing, I always go in the opposite direction. Maybe it's the contrarian in me. Or more likely, maybe it's that I know the Caps are postseason chokers. That when the stage is biggest, the lights are brightest, they will go into the tank every single time. And I know that. That's why I would never pick those guys to win anything that matters in the postseason. I mean, how many times are you all going to let that crew burn you before you wake the hell up? You simply cannot count on the Caps. When all the great teams and all the great players are able to elevate their game, when the stakes are highest, the Capitals do just the opposite. And yes, I'm looking at you, Alex Ovechkin. Where the hell were you last night? Well, I know you played because you were on the ice for both Pittsburgh goals and actually contributed to those Pittsburgh goals, but then contributed nothing to your own team offensively. And it's not the first time you've pulled a no-show in a huge game. This is why I could never throw in with the Caps. Because they're always one of the best teams in the regular season. They're always one of the most talented teams. They can always rip the President's Trophy. But it never means jack in the playoffs, where they cannot get out of their own way and they cannot get out of the second round. How do you all not know that by now? When it comes to picking Stanley Cup winners, I have a gift. But I did not need one to know that you never go with those slugs this time of year. But still, a few of you seem to have this all twisted. A few of you so badly want my streak to end that you actually are saying that I picked the Capitals to win it all. No, I didn't. No, I did not. And I can prove it. We roll tape on every single show that we do. Every single take, every single word that comes out of my mouth is documented. Just so no one gets this twisted, I did not pick the Caps. And I have the tape to prove it. This is what I said. If you were listening, you'll recall. This is exactly what I said right before the playoffs started. Alvin, help them out. I don't take these powers, and they are powers. I don't take them lightly. Who am I going to take? What's the guaranteed lock for 2017? Alvin, are you ready to roll it? Are you ready to document it? I want to make sure you all know it. This year, this time, I see the future of the second round, and I see it in eight letters. P-E-N-G. U-I-N-S. Penguins. Penguins, Penguins, yes, I said it. This is another year. The Washington Capitals don't shake that gorilla off their back. This year, it's not going to be different. Trust me,
Sidney Crosby
will be in the Stanley Cup Finals. Again, Pittsburgh will beat the snot out the Caps. The ingredients are all there. The President's Trophy winners don't have anything you need. A crappy Vezina winner in the Nets. The league's lamest defense of all time. the worst offense
ever.
Top to bottom, they've got no skill. They can carry the puck as well as
freaking nobody.
They have
shallow
depth. And most importantly, they have
the biggest choke,
Alex Ovechkin. Alex is not ready to get his name etched into the greatest trophy in sports. I've got the Pittsburgh
Penguins
beating the Caps in the second round.
4-2-3.
This is about getting it right, and I am never wrong. Write it down. There's your pick. There you have it. There you have it. Proof. Proof that while the entire world was picking the Caps, I didn't. I went the other way. The tape doesn't lie. Even if some of you do. I'm often wrong, but never, ever about the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you heard it right there on tape. It's documented. That's why we roll tape on everything. So you can't come back at me like, hey, Rome, remember when? Well, I remember when. And now you do too. Now that I've got it right there on tape. Telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Email address, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Also, not only did I get that right, I got the Ducks over Edmonton right. Hey, look, I don't know everything. There's some things I know nothing about. I know playoff hockey. And if you've listened to me for any period of time, you know that I know playoff hockey. Let's see, this guy writes in, can't always predict the series. Caps, caps, caps. Can't always predict the series. What did I just say to you? Why are you doing that? Why are you bringing that to me? Quote, can't always predict series. Caps, caps, caps. Hey, Larry Carr. Larry Carr, I just played the tape for you. You heard my prediction. That was said on this program before the playoffs started. What do you mean I can't always predict the series? Come on, Larry. Come on, Larry. Don't hate because I'm great. 1-800-636-8686. Rome, a quick haiku. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha. That's for all the people who ever doubted your Stanley Cup pick and were starting to crap on you before the series was over. Wait until the series is over before you start questioning Rome. I just wish I would have listened from the beginning when you said that the Caps would not win the Stanley Cup. Two things in this world are undefeated. Sex and Rome's hockey pick. Signed, Matt in Poland Springs, Maine. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much. Was that so hard? We are joined by Ducks defenseman Cam Fowler. Cam, it's so good to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Cam, I bet after game seven like that, you got to be great. Let's talk about what it was like going into the game. You know, there was all that talk about Anaheim's track record in Game 7s, how it had not been what you might have liked it to be. What did you make of all the talk, Cam, at the time, and how does it feel to win that Game 7 and bust on through?
Yeah, you know, we understood that a lot of the talk, especially around the media, was going to be about that. And, you know, obviously it's not a fun thing to go through when you lose four straight Game 7s, especially on your home ice, but we just kind of kept telling ourselves that this was a new year, a new team, and all the stuff in the past, you can only use that as experience. And I think we did that, and I thought it was one of our better games of the playoffs. So that was a real encouraging thing to see from our group.
And that should certainly change the narrative. Now, in the buildup also to the game, your coach Randy Carlyle had been talking about how important it was to come out strong because the team was 4-9-6 during the regular season and 2-2 in the playoffs when trailing after one period. Then Edmonton gets that fluky goal less than 4 minutes in. What was the mood like on the bench and with the players after that happened?
Yeah, that was a weird one for sure, and definitely not an ideal way to start, but just kind of the way that it happened, I think the overall kind of consensus on the bench was, you know, that's not something that's going to beat us tonight. Like, it had that feeling that a goal like that isn't going to be the decision in the hockey game. So we stayed pretty calm. We stayed with it. We kept pushing, and then we had probably our best period I've seen us play all year in the second period and really turned the momentum back in our favor.
Yeah, I thought that second period was incredible. Yao shot them 16-3, and it did change momentum. You know, Cam, what you said is really interesting, that when they scored that goal, the thought was, look, we're not losing on that. That's not going to happen. But then when you score your goal and it's taken off the board and nullified by the offside call, and you've had now two things like that happen in the first period, what was the thought then?
Yeah, I honestly think it was more of the same thing. I think we've really tried hard, especially this postseason, to really keep our emotions you know, totally level, because as you know, during playoffs, you can get really high and really low. There's so many momentum swings. So if you have a veteran team that can kind of just stay the course and only control things that obviously are under your control, I think that is a great way to approach it. And I think our guys have done a great job of that so far. And that was a key in last night's game for sure.
Clones, let me get at you for a minute about Stamps.com. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience, 24/7, 7 days a week. It's convenient. It's easy. It's reliable. Totally flexible. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Cam Fowler joining us. I guess the question then is, how do you do that? As an example, the stakes are so high in Game 7 that there might be a temptation to maybe want to do too much, to maybe put yourself in bad spots because you're so eager and you want it so badly. So how do you control your emotion and your adrenaline in a Game 7?
Yeah, it's a very hard thing to do. I think as a young player, you know, myself for sure, in game sevens, you end up doing exactly what you said. You might do things that are a little out of character for you because you want to win so badly, and you know you want to go out and compete as hard as you can for your teammates. But you have to harness that energy that you have for game seven and all the excitement. And at the same time, you still have to do your job. You know, that was one thing that was thrown out a lot in the locker room last night, was do your job and trust the other guys that they're going to do theirs. And then when you do that, you have a complete team effort and everyone contributes. And that's how you end up getting a really big win against a great hockey team.
Ducks defenseman Cam Fowler joining us. You know, it's amazing. Like, you've been here before, and I'm sure that helps. But the fact is, you're still only 25, but last night was your 56th career playoff game with the Ducks. It's a number that ties you with Scott Niedermeyer on the Ducks all-time list. So what's it been like to play in so many playoff games at such a young age?
Yeah, it's been incredible, and I feel very you know, very blessed and very lucky that I've been able to spend my whole time in Anaheim, because this is an organization that is always built to win, and we always feel like at the start of the season that you have a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup, and that's a hard thing to come by. So to be able to have a lot of that experience and kind of be able to just grow up while I'm here and playing a game that I love. I feel really lucky. We have a great group of guys here, so I'm looking forward to our next challenge as we try and make our way to the Stanley Cup final.
So in terms of that challenge, Cam, you've got that quick turnaround. You've got to get ready for game one tomorrow night against Nashville. I know you probably haven't had a whole lot of time to think about the matchup yet, but what are your early thoughts about the Preds?
Well, they are playing incredible hockey right now. Just what they're doing to teams, the way that they're doing it, to sweep Chicago in the first round, you have to be playing at an extremely high level to do something like that. And then obviously they beat a great St. Louis team. So just from the games that I've been able to see so far and playing against them in the regular season, they're an extremely complete team. They have elite players up front and on the back end, and their goaltender is playing as well as anybody right now. So, yeah, it's going to be a big-time challenge for us. We feel like we're prepared and we're ready, and we'll go through our due diligence today and get ready for game one tomorrow.
So last thought, I mean, you were on the ice literally 12 hours ago. So after such an intense, draining series, what do you do between now and then to get your mind and body ready for a series like that?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is just preparation, what you would normally do as a player. We're going to head into the rink here for a little bit and probably do a meeting, kind of talk about the other team and maybe just do a light skate or light workout. So we'll see when we head in. But, yeah, it's more more just kind of rest and recovery, like you said, mentally and physically. And but I expect our guys to be ready and, you know, we should be good to go come tomorrow night.
Cam, one quick thing. I mentioned Scott Niedermeyer. When you first got here, he was your landlord when you first came into the league. I mean, this guy, Niedermeyer's the best. He's larger than life. He was such an amazing player. What was it like to live with him? And then what did you learn from him both in terms of life on the ice and preparing for the game off it?
Yeah, I was so lucky to be able to do that, and for them to open their home to me was really beneficial for me, especially as a rookie, because you know when you come in you have to try and manage hockey and then with things off the ice, and if you're renting a place or you're doing whatever, then you know, as an 18-year-old, you have to figure out, you know, where my meal's coming from, or even like laundry, stuff like that that you'd never thought of before. So a lot of that was really helpful for me. And that was Lisa, his wife, who did a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, Scott, he doesn't say much, but anytime I had some questions or I wanted to pick his brain, he was always there for me. He was always there to help. And who better to talk to than, you know, probably one of the best defensemen of all time.
There's one guy that you do not want to hit and one car that you do not want to hit. It's Pac-Man, who's dealing with anger issues but doing the hard work on himself and trying to improve. So if that guy's doing that work and he's going to anger management counseling and he's got a Rolls Royce, maybe you don't slam into him. Hey, again, personal experience. I've had this happen to me, and I'm not nearly as angry as Pac-Man is. I don't have the anger issues that Pac-Man has. Can I tell you? It happened to me, in fact, twice in my life, and I felt like Pac-Man when it happened. I'm talking about things that just should never, ever happen. You know that thing about don't get caught up in things you can't control? Certain things just happen. Like, these things don't happen. Janet and I, for instance, years ago in Brentwood, on a Sunday morning in Brentwood, we're at a stoplight trying to go to breakfast. There was nobody out, literally nobody out. We were the only ones on this one street at a stoplight. And I had a fairly high performance vehicle, first one I'd ever bought. I was pretty happy with myself on the way up, and we're hanging out. The top's down. It's great. And we're the only ones there, a block away from this breakfast. This guy slams right into me at a stoplight in my new high-performance vehicle. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm not proud of it. I lost it. Literally lost it. Some woman comes out of her store and says to me, quote, "Are you the one making all that noise? Are you the one making all that noise?" I said, "Ma'am, this does not in any way concern you." She said, "Yes, it does. Are you the one making all that noise?" So now I'm having an issue with two people. The idiot who slammed into a parked car and the woman who came out of the store. So I could see where Pac-Man might be angry. Another time, I'm at a gas station. I've got Jake in the back seat. Jake's, I think, two in a baby seat. Some old woman at a gas pump meant to hit reverse, put it in drive, and slammed into my car. And I had a two-year-old in the back seat. Also, as a parent with a two-year-old, I was not good with that either. And literally, and because it was an old lady, I kind of said, "Ma'am, are you kidding? Really?" I don't know what I said. I probably should have handled it better. In fact, I know I should have, because other dudes started to roll up and get my grill. Don't talk to her like that. And I'm like, "This doesn't really concern you." And I really didn't say anything other than, "Ma'am, are you kidding?" I've got a tutor on the back seat. All right. I'm really concerned. I'm really nervous. So what I'm getting at is I should have handled both those situations better. But I could see where Pac, who's definitely more angry than me generally, would not react well when a teenager slams into his Rolls Royce. We have the 911 call. Pac gets his Rolls Royce wrecked. The 911 call has been released, and frankly, it really doesn't sound good for anybody at all. Check this.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
I just had a wreck. I'm on 125.
Okay, we're at 125.
Right here by the gas station in the Chevron.
Hey, which gas station?
The Marathon.
Are you by Mount Carmel, Nebraska? What do you see around you?
I'm right here on 125. I'm right here.
Okay, I understand that you're on 125. 125 is a very long...
Can you stop yelling on the phone?
Stop right there, Alvy, for 1 second, if possible. Sorry about that, Alvy. You hear that? Like, he's doing his best. He's holding it together. And she literally gets a little snippy with him. Like, 125 is a pretty long street. And then he hits her with, will you stop bleeping yelling at me on the phone? All right, so I don't want to be that guy who says, well, he started it. But in that sense, she started it. He was doing just fine until she just kept kind of going at him like, listen, can you be more specific? It's a really big street. It's 911, not 411. Anyway, it started to kind of go sideways after that.
Okay, I understand that you're on 125. 125 is a very long...
Can you stop f***ing yelling on the phone? I just got into a wreck. I'm kind of shook up. I'm trying to find where the f*** I'm at. Good God almighty. 125 and P-H-A-R-O.
Kind of vehicles involved?
A f***ing Rolls Royce.
Okay, is that really the type of vehicle that's involved, or?
Yes, it is.
Oh!
Is anybody
Can you
injured?
Stop right there for a minute? That's incredible. She says, what kind of a vehicle is involved? And now his temperature is rising. Now he's had about enough. A bleeping Rolls Royce. And she chases that with, is it really that kind of a vehicle?
Kind of vehicles involved?
A f***ing Rolls Royce.
Okay, is that really the type of vehicle that's involved, or?
Yes, it is.
Is anybody injured?
No.
Turn your hazard lights on in your vehicle, and I'll get an officer over there as soon as I have one available.
I'm not sure at that point who's having a worse day, him or her. Hey, look, I understand that he's under a lot of stress because somebody just slammed in his Rolls Royce, and he knows. I mean, in the back of his mind, he's got to be thinking, uh-oh, if I go or I let these hands go, that's it for me. Everybody's already looking at me. I've already had a bad offseason. I'm in anger management courses right now. Somebody slammed into my Rolls Royce, and literally that dispatch operator is messing with me. Calling me out and asking if it really is a Rolls Royce. On the other hand, she's got a pretty stressful job herself. And she probably does have to decipher between all the prank calls, all the butt dials, all the people calling for non-emergencies, and maybe on some level, I'm not saying how she could feel this way because you could tell his anger was real. Maybe on some level she thought that he was messing with her. It was a prank call. Maybe he didn't really have a Rolls Royce, but he made it pretty clear that he did. But you can go ahead and put her right alongside some of the other 911 dispatch legends, including the dispatcher who took the call about Jamal Anderson's recent gas station incident.
Lovely.
Look at the tone and the attitude. I'm not saying they're all like that. I'm not saying it's an easy job. I'm thankful that they're there to do it. But that's your reaction to a call?
Lovely.
But then again, that was out of context. That was in response to what the caller had said. Lovely.
Lovely.
Then, of course, you have the GOAT. It'll never be as good as this guy, Mike Forbes.
911, what is your emergency?
Yes, I need a police officer over here.
What's going on?
I've got two teenage daughters, and I just got home from work. They were physically fighting with each other, and one of them kicked a hole in a door. And they're 12 and almost 14, and the 12-year-old is completely out of control. And I physically, if she's as big as I am, I can't control her.
Okay, did you want us to come over to shoot her? Are you there?
Excuse me?
That's a joke. Okay, so...
Who are you? What is your name?
Mike Forbes.
Okay, that's not funny, Mike.
I'm sorry.
Guess what? I'm going to file a formal complaint.
I don't blame you a bit.
Hey, because you know what? This is really not very funny.
I know it's not, ma'am. I apologize.
Well, guess what? It's not going to be very funny when I go in front of your supervisor and tell him.
I understand.
I guess he can just listen to the tape.
Yes, he can. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well,
hold
sorry
on.
Doesn't
hold
count.
On
I need
second.
A police officer.
Hold on.
Well, that's incredible. How many times have you heard that? That gets better with time. That was today. That might be my favorite listen ever of Forbes. For some reason, that hit me the right way today. This woman's just freaking out. I can't handle these kids. I cannot raise these kids by myself. I can't do this. They're bigger than me. They're more physical than me. They won't stop fighting. I'm at wit's end. I'm calling 911. I need some help. I cannot raise my kids. You want me to come over and shoot them? And then you have that great dead air, that great pregnant pause where she's thinking, did I just hear what I think that I heard? What did you just say? Forbes is like waiting for the laughter. Like it's an evening at the improv. Would you like me to come over and shoot her? And then all of a sudden she turns the table. She flips the script. She's in charge. She's dominating. Now she is dominating. Yeah, well, where was that mom with your own kids? If you had handled your kids like that, you wouldn't be on the phone in the first place with Forbes. I'm not condoning Forbes saying, would you like me to come over and shoot them? Yeah, I'm guessing Forbes didn't last very long on that job after that. Anyway, what we have now is somebody to add to our 911 library. Is that really the type of vehicle that's involved? Are you kidding me? You can see how she was on the defense after Pack had F-bombed her up and down the street. Now, of course, Pac's reps would tell you that he's a model of decorum. His agent told TMZ that he was shaken up in the wreck, but, quote, showed great restraint. He showed great restraint. Yeah, I guess it depends on how you define restraint. What, because there were no chalk outlines or body bags involved, he showed great restraint? Anyway, bad looks all the way around. This is not all on Adam. Bad on the dispatcher, bad on Adam, and probably worst of all, bad on whoever is teaching Pac-Man's anger management class. Because my man was doing anything but managing his anger. Now granted, like I said, when I've been hit minding my own business, I did not do a real good job of managing my anger. But you've got to give this guy something to work with. You've got to give this guy some techniques. Because some 18-year-old kid might slam into his car, and that 18-year-old kid is not sorry he did it either. In fact, he's milking it. Better hope that dealing with 911 dispatchers are not on that final exam in that anger management class. But it's not all Adam's fault. Everybody looks bad here. Nobody looks good, including the kid who slammed into Pac, who is milking it for everything it's worth. It's some 18-year-old kid. And apparently Pac-Man, and again, Adam tried to apologize after the crash. But the kid wasn't hearing it. He claims that Pac called him every name in the book. How do we know? Because the kid went looking for the spotlight after the wreck. And he found TMZ. And he answered questions. And he even, an 18-year-old now, even had some advice for Pac.
Now that you've had some time to kind of reflect on everything that's happened, what would you say to him?
That lives are more important than cars. And then also, you may be able to replace your car, but if I were to get into an accident dying or even somebody else, you just won't be able to replace their life.
It's a good take, son. But weren't you the kid who hit Pac-Man? Not the other way around. And also, weren't you the kid who admitted to texting while driving when you slammed into that Rolls Royce? So let me guess, lives are more important than cars, but that text message that you sent was more important than lives, right? You know who always says that lives are more important than cars? People who drive terrible cars. Golden State guard Sean Livingston joins me. Sean, so good to have you back. How are you, Sean?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, always.
Sean, always good to talk to you, bud. Thank you. You swept Portland and Utah, as I mentioned, in the first two rounds. Winning, Sean, in the playoffs is never easy, and it's even tougher when the team is battling injuries and the head coach is battling health problems. So how have you guys gone about making it look as easy as you have?
Oh, man. Winning definitely isn't easy. It's the hardest thing to do, you know, in the NBA. And I think, you know, for us just to be able to have a veteran team, experience plays a factor, especially this time of year. And the experience as well that we had last year with Steve going down and us really having to hold each other accountable and to police each other out there on the court. And, you know, we play the right way and it just falls in line.
Sean Livingston joining us. You know, Sean, every year is so different, and the challenges to come up each season are different. So how would you compare to where you are as a team right now versus where you were as a team at this point last year?
Man, great question. Honestly, it's two totally different teams. You know, similar core, Some of the same guys were still here. I mean, last year where we were, it was such a grind. I mean, going through the whole regular season, chasing the record, getting the record, and then going into the playoffs, you know, there wasn't really, you know, any breaks. With Steph going down kind of that first game, it really, you know, threw us for a loop. We had to scramble, you know, I had to play a little bit more minutes. And, I mean, it's just for everybody. It was a grind. We won, and we got the job done, and we made it to the finals. But, I mean, it was definitely a tougher road, you know, and some of those series were a little bit more hard fought because we were a man down. You know, an MVP caliber player goes down on any team, it's going to change the dynamics of that team. And this year, I think we're, you know, guys are getting healthy at the right time. Coach has done a great job throughout the season managing our minutes, and same within the playoffs. And I think we're hitting our stride at the right time. So just trying to keep that rhythm going.
Golden State guard Sean Livingston joining us. You know, Sean, when you and I spoke back in November, we talked about team chemistry. We talked about the changes to the personnel during the offseason. You know, we can go on and on and start with Kevin Durant, but let me ask about somebody else. A change that doesn't get nearly as much attention was David West, who you've described as like the supervisor of the bench and the locker room. So what's it been like having him on the team?
Man, it's been great, honestly. Again, experiences, you know, you can't really put a price on it in a sense of, you know, this time of year in the playoffs, guy that's been there, guy that knows how to win, you know, he, and as well, you look at his situation, his journey, you know, to be able to turn down money to, you know, to win, it just shows you where his priorities are and what, you know, what kind of, what he's about and what he brings to our team. And, you know, you look at a guy like Draymond, he's our emotional leader. He's a guy that kind of keeps everybody and holds everybody accountable. But David's one of those guys as well. And I think, you know, he, when he speaks, guys listen. You know, and it's just to have that veteran presence in the locker room, it really is invaluable.
And Sean, Draymond, you mentioned him. He had this great, great quote to SI, and give me a minute to read this. He said, quote, "All you ever hear is, oh, man, Steph Curry, best shooter in the world. Klay Thomas, 60 points in three quarters. KD, freaking Nietzsche, in and out, crossover, full speed transition, tomahawk. And, hey, that bleep is sexy, so you fall in love with it, but there's sexy bleep all over the NBA. Don't forget about the other reasons we win," end quote. So let me ask you, when you have a nice turnaround in the lane or you've got a block on Derek Favors like the one you had in Game 4, how satisfying are those things, and do they fall into the same sexy bleep category?
No, honestly, I mean, that's what it's about. Seriously, when I, you know, when I'm coming to the court, you know, at the end of the day, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm not trying to play for stats. The only stat I'm playing for is the score, you know. So all the little things, you know, this time of year, that's what wins games. And you know, we have so many of those players. And then that's the thing, too, you know, as a general basketball fan, I mean, you fall in love with three, you fall in love with the dunks, you fall in love with the crossovers. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when it comes down to winning, you know, those players that dream my name, you know, Steph and Klay and KD, like, you know, they're obviously the most talented players that we have in this league. But I think what separates those stars apart from maybe other stars is, you know, they do the little things in order to win, you know, with Steph, you know, getting loose balls, you know, boxing out on a rebound. Those are the type of plays that win ball games, and we have so many of those kind of utility players on our team that it makes it easy to kind of fall in line.
Golden State guard Sean Livingston back on the program. Now, Sean, I think we all get up and we forget. You know, we think about you guys. We think about the way you play, the way you show up, how the team does. I think we all forget that you guys all have other lives and things going off the floor that you have to deal with, similar to the rest of the world. As an example, you welcomed a daughter into the world back in February. What has the experience been like for you? And then how much has that changed your perspective on things?
Unbelievable. I mean, it's indescribable. I mean, and, you know, as all the parents out there in the world knows, you can only describe it when you actually go through it and, you know, see her for the first time or see your child for the first time come out. I mean, it's, you know, it definitely gives life a renewed purpose. You know, there's a certain joy that you wake up with every time you see your kid, you know, and also what I do it for. And then, you know, basketball is great. You know, obviously what we're doing is great. We have a dream job. You know, in order to come home and see your child, you know, it's more to life than just basketball. And I mean, it's a truly amazing feeling.
It's extremely well said on your part. You know, you've been through some really challenging things, physical things, emotional things in your career. So on a personal level, what's it been like to watch Steve Kerr and the pain that he's in and what he's dealing with?
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough, Jim. I mean, honestly, going through the struggle that I went through, it was more on the surface level, meaning, you know, like I was dealing with my leg. You know, obviously the amputation and all that was kind of real life for me that I had to deal with. But you talk about kind of what Steve's going through and kind of a spinal tap leak. And, I mean, you start talking about his way of life, you know, and being able to enjoy his life, being able to, you know, he can't coach, can't, you know, he doesn't feel good. He doesn't, you know, certain aspects of even just waking up, going to the store, trying to sleep, whatever it is, you know, having migraines and stuff of that nature. I mean, it's frustrating, you know, and I know it's frustrating for him because of the type of person that he is. You know, he gets joy, you know, out of being around us, being around other people, you know, just his personality in general. And for him not to be himself, you know, that's tough. You know, that's tough for anybody when you just can't be yourself. You want to, but your health is holding you back. And so then you start to realize the importance of your health for all of us. And like I said, it's more than basketball. From a human component, you know, we want to see him back healthy, not just the coaches, but for himself and his family, you know, and so he can enjoy the rest of his life. And I know it's tough. And so we're all praying for him that he, you know, he gets back healthy and better.
No doubt. Sean Livingston joining us for another moment or so. Sean, the Cavs are 8-0 in the playoffs, and Ty Lue said that he feels like people want to see another Cavs-Warriors series in the same way that people want to see the Celtics and Lakers back in the day. I mean, obviously, this is not your focus right now, but is there anything to that? I mean, does it feel like a Celtics-Lakers type of rivalry at this point?
You know, I can't quote that. I can't quote that until we actually, you know, if we were to meet up, God willing, you know, I think you can maybe put it in that category just because 3 years in a row, right? I mean, back and forth. So, you know, we'll see. I think it definitely does have the making of being a kind of a rivalry and, you know, us meeting up the past 3 years and, you know, with obviously the players, star players that are on both teams. And so it's definitely there, you know, the headlines and everything. You know, obviously the fans are going to reach for it, but, you know, at the end of the day, we still got to do our job. So,
Sean, it's a job, and no matter what, it's a job, you know that, but I also know you a little bit and know that you got to appreciate this opportunity. I mean, what's it feel like to be at this point in your life and in your career and have this opportunity still in front of you? I mean, this is as good as it gets.
Grateful every day, every game for sure. You know, that I say a prayer and just thank them, you know, for the opportunity, because knowing, you know, obviously my journey and everything, you know, playing, you know, not being able to make it in the NBA, playing in the D League, you know, getting waived, getting cut, all those different things, you know, helped shape my journey, helped shape my character, where I'm at today. And now to be able to play on this stage in front of, you know, on this platform, with this team, with these guys, is, you know, it definitely comes full circle. So I'm grateful. I mean, that's the best way I can put it.
We are joined once again by Dana White. Dana, good morning. Great to have you. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Dana, I'm awesome. How's your life? What's going on?
I'm good, man. Same old. Plugging around, doing fights, and, you know, not much has changed.
It's good life. All right, so why don't we take this card first? You've got five current or former champions, starting at the very top with Stipe Miocic going up against Junior Dos Santos. Dos Santos is the last guy to beat Stipe in a five-round classic back in December of 2014. First, go back. What do you remember most about that fight?
Yeah, it was an absolute war. That's one of those fights that, you know, you could watch over and over and over again. Junior Dos Santos pulls out a victory, squeaks out the decision. Since then, Stipe Miocic has gone on a tear, knocking out everybody he's faced, including Fabricio Werdum for the heavyweight championship of the world. Then his first title defense against Alistair Overeem, he knocked him out too. I don't see this being the same fight. Junior Dos Santos has always been a heavy-handed, iron-chinned, you know, monster. So Stipe Miocic is not the same fighter that Junior faced. I don't see this going the distance.
Yeah, I mean, they can't be the same guys, right? 2.5 years later, they can't be the same guys. It can't be the same fight. But in that first fight, Dos Santos fought off 17 of 18 takedown attempts. First off, what's that say about his ability to defend? And then how does Stipe go about breaking through and taking him down?
Yep, Junior Dos Santos is an incredibly well-rounded fighter, tough guy, knockout power. And I think this time, Stipe doesn't go for the takedowns. You know, he knows that Junior has unbelievable takedown defense, but I think Stipe's hands are better than they used to be. I think he's faster. You saw it in all these other heavyweights that he faced, and I think he just comes in. He comes in and tries to knock out Junior Dos Santos.
Dana White joining us. You know, JDS is one of the nicest guys outside the cage. Stipe comes across as a very genuine guy. He talks openly about the fact that he's afraid of heights and ghosts, and he recently splashed out and bought himself a set of used golf clubs. I mean, how do you explain the fact that these two dudes seem so nice and normal outside the cage, but they can turn into killers inside of it?
It's a fact. Yeah, Junior Dos Santos is one of the nicest guys ever. And Stipe Miocic's story is awesome. You know, a firefighter, you know, the guy's the heavyweight champion of the world, but he's still a firefighter because he likes to help, you know, the people in his hometown. He's a great guy. He's a real guy. He's a down-to-earth guy. And, you know, there should be more of that in sports.
We're talking to Dana White. You know, Dana, we always talk about the thing about the UFC is that anybody can be beat. Pretty much everybody does get beat. But when you look at the heavyweight division and the fact that you've got these huge guys with crazy power, how hard is it to win that belt and then to keep it and defend it?
You want to know how hard it is? In 17 years since we've owned the company, the biggest streak of defending the heavyweight title is two.
Hmm.
If Stipe Miocic wins on Saturday night, he ties the streak. If he wins another one, he'll beat it. He'll break the record.
All right, so you got a card. You've got that, and you've got some other things, including Joanna Jędrzejczyk defending her strawweight belt against Jessica Andrade. Before we get to the fight, JJ is incredible in those stare downs. Back in the day, she told one opponent, and I quote, "This is your last fight, bitch." And then she dropped that legendary headbutt at the UFC 205 presser. How would you describe her personality and her attitude when she steps into the cage?
Yeah, sweetest person you'll ever meet. She's amazing. Gangster. The week of fight week, man. She turns into a completely different person. She's a killer. One of the most technical strikers you'll ever see in any combat sport. And she's one of those people that when she smells blood in the water, she goes for the kill. She has incredible killer instinct. And this fight's going to be awesome. And this will be her fifth title defense. One more, and she ties Ronda Rousey.
All right, so you have that fact. She's a nasty, nasty striker, but Jessica is extremely well-rounded. So what is Jessica's path to victory?
Yeah, Jessica Andrade is one of those people that if it has to stay on its feet, she'll stay up and go toe-to-toe. But I think she's going to try to get Joanna down to the ground, and she's going to try to submit her.
Talking to Dana White, UFC 211 is coming up this weekend. Dana, before you go, Anderson Silva is going to fight at UFC 212. But his opponent failed a test for marijuana. He then demanded an opportunity to fight for an interim belt. And when you said that that was not going to happen, he went on this Instagram rant. He threatened to retire. What do you make of how he's handling this whole situation?
You know, I have to deal with tons of different personalities and egos and lots of different things with all the athletes that I deal with. Anderson Silva has always been one of those guys that's been unique to deal with. Never at this level. You know, I didn't make Kelvin Gastelum, you know, test positive for marijuana and pull out of the fight. And we tried to make other fights and get other opponents for him. You can't demand a title fight or I'm going to retire, especially when you know that my philosophy is this. If you even mention the word retirement, you should probably retire. So, you know, I know he's not thrilled and happy with me. He and I need to sit down and do a face-to-face.
You think that's going to happen? If so, when? And how do you think that'll go?
Yeah. Listen, at the end of the day, despite Anderson Silva going crazy on Instagram and saying all these things right now, he's actually a really nice guy. And, you know, he's angry right now, and we need to sit down. Everything's better face-to-face, so I probably need to fly out to California and sit down and talk this out with him.
We're talking
soon,
to Dana,
very
right,
soon.
Dana White joining us. Dana, the plan was also for GSP to fight Michael Bisping in July, but then GSP released a video where he invited Bisping to pick a date for the fight after October. What was your reaction when you saw that?
Yeah, we had already done a press conference, and much like, you know, what I said about the Mayweather fight, you know, we were shooting for that September date. And then up out of nowhere pops up, you know, this Triple G versus Canelo fight. Life waits for nobody, man. Life waits for nobody. And that's just too long. It's not fair that the rest of the division should have to wait that long for George St. Pierre. And George St. Pierre has been saying he's going to fight, you know, for the last 3 years. And now it's November. I can't wait for GSP.
You know, when it was announced that Canelo and Triple G would be fighting on September 16th, you said that it took away a date from McGregor-Mayweather. I mean, did that bother you at all, or are those negotiations so far from final that it just doesn't matter?
Yeah, no, it's just that was kind of the date we were shooting for. You know, I was doing an interview earlier, and they said, well, the MGM said that you hadn't held the date, and we hadn't held the date, but that's the date we were shooting for. And again, like I said about life, you know, I didn't see any big fights coming up, you know, that we couldn't have took the date from if they ended up with that date. But then they come up with Canelo and Triple G, which is a real fight. You know, that's a fight I'll actually buy tickets for and go to myself. So, yeah, life waits for nobody, man. We should have moved faster. We should have been further along in the negotiations, and it's our own fault.
All right, so, I mean, you just own that, Dana. It's a pretty candid thing to say, so where does that leave you? For instance, you've been on record as saying, look, this is not the best thing necessarily for our business or our company, but I'm not going to stand in the way of Conor. But then now there's another obstacle. You finally reach a point where you say, you know what, maybe it's just time to move on from this fight, and is that point coming soon?
Oh, definitely, and I honestly believe that Conor would feel that way too. But this has nothing to do with Mayweather's side. This is on our side. You know, Conor just had a baby. And, you know, anybody who has kids know how that is leading up to that. And then the aftermath, of, you know, a few days after having a baby, I plan on having this thing locked up by this Sunday and then moving on to Team Mayweather and starting to negotiate with them. So if we really do get it done in that time frame, then this thing could possibly happen. But, again, I still need to go and negotiate with them. There's no guarantee that we're going to come to a deal.
So what you're saying is you'll get Conor's side done by Sunday and then move on to Mayweather, or you're just going to move on, period?
Correct.
All right, Dana, UFC 211.
I'm used to answering Mayweather-McGregor questions, believe me.
I know it. Frequent fill-in guest host. Huge Puck fan. He was at that game last night. Joey, brother, what's going on?
Romy, how are you?
Good, bud. How about you?
I'm well. That environment last night, and before I get to that environment last night, it was insane. But I got to say, congratulations on your pick of the Penguins. I mean, you are like Karnak. You are beyond magnificent. I didn't see it coming, but obviously you did. But it was a bad night in D.C. between Comey, Beal, and Ovechkin. I don't know who had the worst day. Ovechkin may just want to leave and let Kovalchuk take his place because he wants to play in the Olympics anyway.
Mm.
But heading to Anaheim, I've never seen so many drunken Oiler fans in my life. They were intimidating the Ducks fans until Ryan Getzlaff was all over number 97, Connor McDavid, who pulled the Harry Houdini and the Invisible Man in one shot. He was nowhere to be seen except for one chance. Getzlaff was all over him. As you said, Ryan Kessler was unbelievable. Cogliano with that goal. But the unsung hero of that game last night was a fourth liner, Jared Bull, number 40, who, first of all, I couldn't believe was even in the lineup. But that fourth line brought it and I think tilted the ice in the favor of the Ducks, who then used Nick Ritchie to win that game and reversed the curse. Well, losing four in a row in Game 7, I wouldn't call it a curse. But, man, was there tension in there last night. But it was a great vibe when they won.
Brother, this is why you guest host the show when I'm not here.
Brother.
This is why you're my go-to guy. Joey Vendetta. Let's go to Michigan. Dave in Michigan. Good to have you, Dave. How are you?
Fine. How you doing, Jim?
I'm great, bud. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, man, I got to call you out. I heard your prediction before the playoffs, and you specifically... Now, I didn't tape this, man, but I've got one heck of a memory. You specifically picked the Capitals to win the Stanley Cup, and now you're denying it. I'm one of those one percenters. Man up and admit you're wrong. Oh, by the way, Alvy, that was one poor editing job, man, to make Jim look like he sounded like he picked it the right way. So admit you're wrong in front of the whole country, dude. This is nothing personal. I love your show. Been listening for a couple decades. And, man, you picked the Caps, and now you're denying it. Come clean, man.
All right. You know, respect, Dave. I respect it. First of all, thank you for listening for decades. I know you love the show. And listen, this show is all about accountability and responsibility. But you also did say, and I heard this, you didn't tape it. Well, I did tape it. I've got the Pittsburgh Penguins beating the Caps in the second round. 4-3. Thanks for checking in, clones. Much appreciated. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, and you know what to do. Trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow for one more Daily Jungle, and we wrap the week.